राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। गोपी जना वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी। गोपी जना वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी। यशोद नंदन व्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरावन चारी। यमुना तीरावन चारी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी। यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरावन चारी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शत श्री श्रीमद हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी शिल प्रभुपाद की जाय। अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जाय। ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जाय। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरांग। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 5 चैप्टर 1 टेक्स्ट नंबर 8। सतत्र तत्र गगनतल उडुपतिर इव विवानवालभिर अनुपथम अमर परिवृद्धिर अभिपूज्यमान पति पति च वारुतस्य सिद्ध गंधर्व साध्य चारण मुनिगुणैर उपगीयमानो गंधमदन द्रोणिम अवभासयन उपससर्प। ट्रांसलेशन एंड purport बाय श्रील प्रभुपाद की जाय। एज लॉर्ड ब्रह्मा डिसेंडेड ऑन हिज कैरियर द ग्रेट स्वान All the residents of the planets named Siddhaloka, Gandharvaloka, Sadhyaloka, and Charanaloka, as well as great sages and demigods, flying in their different airplanes, assembled within the canopy of the sky to receive Lord Brahma and worship him. As he received respect and adoration from the residents of the various planets, Lord Brahma appeared just like the full moon surrounded by illuminating stars. Lord Brahma's great swan then arrived at the border of Gandhamadana hill and approached Prince Priyavrata, who was sitting there. So if you can imagine what that scene will be like when Lord Brahma arrives. Purport. It appears from this description that there is regular interplanetary travel between the planets of the demigods. Another significant point is that there is a planet covered mostly by great mountains, one of which is Gandhamadana hill. Three great personalities, Priyavrata, Narada, and Swayambhuva Manu, were sitting on this hill. According to Brahma Samhita, each universe is filled with different planetary systems, and every system has a unique opulence. For example, on Siddhaloka, all the residents are very advanced in the powers of mystic yoga. They can fly from one planet to another without airplanes or other flying machines. Similarly, the residents of Gandharvaloka are expert in musical science, and those on Sadhyaloka are all great saints. The interplanetary system undoubtedly exists, and residents of different planets may go from one to another. On this earth, however, we have not invented any machine that can go directly from one planet to another, although an unsuccessful attempt has been made to go directly to the moon. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shrivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. I thought I'll take your permission and digress from the very specific purport, if you don't mind. And then we'll come back to some things in the purport. Something about Maharaj Priyavrata's life, that as we study this section, it is important to keep in mind, appreciate, meditate, pray for, aspire for that stage of consciousness that Maharaj Priyavrata exhibits. So imagine Priyavrata Maharaj being such an amazing, very exalted, and completely detached ascetic. Brahmachari, and very happy in that position. And suddenly, his guru, Parama Guru, and Parama Parama Guru show up and say, "Get married, Prabhuji." And although he expresses some hesitation, of course, they didn't say get married, they said become the king of the universe, but naturally he has to marry. Basically give up this situation of life and take on that situation of life. Yeah. So imagine being told like that. And Maharaj Priyavrata very happily said, "Okay, whatever you say." Of course, there's some dialogue that ensues. What about this? What about that? I'm concerned about this. All that ensues. However, Maharaj Priyavrata very happily says, "Yes, whatever you say." This stage of consciousness is something to aspire for. that one day we may get an instruction from our guru, from our superiors, that says, do this, or don't do this, and we can say yes. It was not easy for Maharaj Priyavrata. So as we study this section, that is something to keep in mind. So what kind of preparation, what kind of state of consciousness should we develop such that when the request, order, something comes, we say yes. Thank you. And Maharaj Priyavrata embodies that quality. So I thought I'll spend a few minutes on talking of a topic that many people like to ask, discuss. It's called self-abandonment. Self-abandonment means, let's say the spiritual master says, do this. And inside I feel like not doing this. Or the spiritual master says, don't do this. And inside I feel like doing this. But I do it, I follow the order of the spiritual master without my heart in its right place. What happens then? Or simply put, I want to say no, but I say yes. I want to say yes, but I say no. And the reasons for which I do what I do is not connected to the heart, but it's more environmental. Environmental means, what will others think of me? I want to be known as a good disciple. Why should I say no? Will my spiritual master think of me as an unsurrendered disciple? All these reasons, without the heart jubilantly saying, oh, that's what the spiritual master wants, fine. So that stage, what happens when the heart says no, but the mouth, the tongue says yes? Generally, if it is not done wholeheartedly, then some time passes, and some other situation comes in life, and the first thing we do says, see, my guru forced me. I was not prepared, but somehow I was forced into it. So one doesn't take responsibility for saying yes or no in that situation. We like to, in general, we like to ascribe blame or responsibility on someone else, always. To err is human. And to blame it on someone else is even more human. Always. The first thing we do is somehow, as soon as someone says, have you done this wrong? Our minds are so trained into thinking so fast in saying, not me, that person, that situation, not me. It's just ingrained. Why is that? Because the first thing we are accustomed to is mode of passion and ignorance. And mode of passion and ignorance always stay. Of course, ignorance we don't see anywhere. Passion we see there, and goodness helps us reflect here. A person in the mode of goodness will look here. What did I do wrong? Did I do something wrong? Could I have done it differently? Could I have done it better? So mode of passion always says, that situation's not right, that person's not right. If he had not said like this, if she had not done like that, had they done this way, I would have been perfect. I mean, that's so silly. If everyone was perfect, I would be perfect. Wow. Doesn't make any sense. But it makes full sense for a person in the mode of passion. So one who is abandoned, this is a term used, one who has abandoned oneself will always ascribe the blame on someone or something. Now, there are situations where we want to say no, but we say yes. We want to say yes, but we say no. Whatever is the situation. That must be done clearly, understanding that I am making this conscious choice and I am the one who's responsible for whatever comes from this. Because the whole process of bhakti is, like Vaisheshika Prabhu likes to say, individual, spontaneous, and most importantly, voluntary. Bhakti is voluntary. Nobody is forcing anybody to do anything. Whatever we do is a voluntary expression of service. For example, I'll take our little well here, because I think of myself as a frog in a well. So for me, all my examples are well related. Not nicely related, well related. Well related. So we are all serving Kishore Kishori voluntarily. No one's forcing us. However, we are supposed to follow the orders or requests or instructions of our superiors. So someone will say, "What? I'm being asked to follow the order. Isn't that forcing?" No, I have voluntarily accepted to be part of this team. And it comes with it. The day I say, "I don't want to be part of this team," don't have to follow. It means life will look differently, but I've voluntarily accepted that I want to be part of this team. I want to serve Kishore Kishori with all these Prabhus and Matajis. That's the spontaneous and voluntary and individual. We're working as a team, but every individual is doing seva. So it's always voluntary. That means it's always our conscious choice to do something or not do something. That's important to know, so that the blame is never upon someone or some circumstance. Yes, sometimes the circumstance manifests in such a way that we may have the best intentions, but the whole thing looks very different. Then a conscientious bhakta will always look at the circumstance as, what can I learn from this? What is it that I need to have done differently? How could I contribute to this situation with better quality of Krishna consciousness? So we've heard this many times, we'll say it again. Any situation that we go into, our experience of Krishna consciousness in that situation depends upon how much Krishna consciousness we take into it. Let's say there is an argument between two devotees. One wants to prove his point. The other just wants to learn. Okay? So you can tell the difference in Krishna consciousness, if there is such. Each person's experience of that interaction will be different. It will depend upon how much Krishna conscious each person was in that interaction. If we go into a situation with something other than Krishna consciousness, our experience will be something other than Krishna consciousness. Of course, it's not that everything is predetermined in that way. Like in the middle of the conversation, I could remember, oh, better to be humble. My experience will be very different. Humility doesn't mean just be quiet. Humility means to act like a servant of Krishna. So whatever is the necessary expression of humility in that situation, circumstance, that's what one must express. It all depends on how much Krishna consciousness we are carrying. So if you're not carrying Krishna consciousness, we will not experience it. So here Maharaj Priyavrata, so this is the fabric or the backdrop on which I'm appreciating or learning Maharaj Priyavrata's pastime. There are other lessons in this. This lesson stands out for me. Life is moving in this direction. Guru says, go in that direction. And he just turns around and follows that. I mean, that's amazing. That's very difficult and is amazing. No wonder he's such a great personality. And we may not be asked to do such big things. We may be asked small things. Do this way. And our readiness depends upon the sense of surrender that we have. So there are two words one I've hinted at, one I've spoken about. This is called Atmanivedana. Atmanivedana means surrendering oneself completely unto Krishna, unto Krishna's instructions by body, mind, and words. Generally, with words and body, the surrender is fairly easier. Not that it's easy, it's easier. It's the mind that's the real tricky fellow. But that's Atmanivedana. The opposite of that, which looks like surrender, is this self-abandonment idea. Self-abandon means I don't want to do it, but I do it because of some other reason, which we discussed. You look quizzically. Should I say it again? Self-surrender, Atmanivedana, means to completely surrender one's body, mind, and words unto Krishna and Krishna's instructions voluntarily. Self-abandonment, to me, means looks like surrender, but is not. And the reasons for, the impetus for so-called surrender is something other than Krishna consciousness. Is something other than genuine feelings. It is environmental. And because it is environmental, when the environment changes, my surrender changes. My sense of surrender changes. For example, there are many situations where the guru says something to the disciple, yes, Guru Maharaj, whatever you say, zoom, 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 few years later, something. Totally different. So Maharaj Priyavrata is not like that. He is right now in a very great place of ecstasy. He's on the Gandhamadana mountain, and with him are two great persons, his spiritual masters. One is his father and Srila Narada Muni. Both are with him. Imagine what nice association. And they're discussing a difficult topic, his life, course of his life. And to add to it, Lord Brahma manifests. And when Lord Brahma appears, he doesn't come alone. He travels with great entourage. The residents of Siddhaloka, Gandharvaloka, Sadhyaloka, they all have come to receive him. So yesterday Gokulananda Prabhu was describing that when Lord Brahma appears to meet somebody, it must be an important issue. It must be a topic that must be of great significance. That the most important, the primary person of the entire universe has decided to speak with a Prabhu. Maharaj Priyavrata. Of course, he is his grandson, but this role is not grandfather coming to meet a grandson. It's very official. Because if it is not official, he might have come alone. But he's come with his whole, what's it called, motorcade? All the residents of the different planetary systems are singing and chanting great mantras and receiving. And he's come in great, he's come on official business to speak with Maharaj Priyavrata. So Prabhupada tells us that there is, by this we can understand that there is interplanetary travel. The residents of the Earth planet don't have a clue about this. We're trying, And he says, made an unsuccessful attempt. We're trying. We want. We like. Since we cannot actually do it, we enjoy it in fantasy movies. From one planet to another planet. Residents of another planet coming to this planet. And these movies are very successful. That's the best way of experiencing it, is a true imagination. And Prabhupada says, another significant point is that there is a planet covered mostly by great mountains. There's a planet that is full of mountains. One of that is the Gandhamadana hill. The point being made here is that, like we say in English, birds of a feather flock together. Persons who have specific kinds of perfections, they flock together, they are together. Karmically speaking also, they are together. So those who are the siddhas, or he says, yeah, siddhas, those who have perfection in mystic yoga, they have a planet for themselves. It's called the Siddha Loka. Persons who are experts in musical science, they all live together on Gandharva Loka. The great sages and saints, they hang out on Sadhya Loka planet. And those who are confused, don't know what to do with life, are on earthly planet. Like, don't know. Where are you going? I don't know. Where do you want to go? I don't know. Where are others going? I don't know. They have a three-word mantra on earth planet, Bhumandala. What do you want to do? I don't know. What would you like? I don't know. Anything you ask? I don't know. This is the Bhumandala mantra. It's not written. I'm making it up, of course. You get the idea. But I don't know is the greatest mantra. I don't know. But they don't behave like that. But that's the basic thing. I don't know. Here these people have purpose. These people have something that they want to do. They know what they're doing. They know where life is taking them. And then Prabhupada says, the interplanetary system undoubtedly exists. Undoubtedly exists. Last night, since we are studying the fifth canto, I was explaining to my son what the fifth canto has. And one of the things that's coming up later is the structure of the universe. And I'm preparing all of us ahead of time. It is very complicated. So extremely complicated that all we can do is appreciate and say, oh, very nice. It's really like that. At least for me. So we were watching this video by Sadaputa Prabhu called The Mysteries of the Sacred Universe. And in that short video, he explains the structure of the universe, and that Shukadeva Goswami is simultaneously speaking of four different models from one shloka to another. And he doesn't say, now I'm talking about this model. He doesn't say anything. He just goes, you know, and we'll see more of, sorry, verse is too long. It just goes from one to, and Parikshit Maharaj is totally understanding everything. Yeah, very good, keep going. And just like, wow, what's going on? So thanks to Prabhus like Sadaputa Prabhu and other Vaishnavas who spend years and years studying this, have put it in language that's, I guess, simpler. It's still complicated, but simpler. And one of the things in that video explains multidimensional travel or interdimensional travel. How the yogis take the path from this point in the universe all the way to Dhruva planet, to Vishnu Loka. There is a particular orbit trajectory for such persons. There is description of how Narada Muni moves from one realm to another realm like that. Like if we were to travel by spacecraft, we cannot. But if we were to, for the sake of discussion, hypothetically speaking, it will take us years and years and years to reach upper planetary systems. It's coming up, so just to give us a sense of awe here. The entire Bhumandala is situated between the two halves of the universe, and that very thin gap is compared to gap when two halves of a chana or a pea are put together. How much gap is there? Very thin, wafer-like. That is the entire Bhumandala space called the Antariksha. All the other planetary systems are above that. And for us, that is like super high astronomical distances. So the point is the universe is very big. So in that, this describes how Narada Muni travels from one dimension to another dimension very quickly. Suddenly, even Durvasa Muni, right? The story of Ambarish Maharaj, when the Sudarshan Chakra was pursuing him, zippity-doo-da, from Ambarish Maharaj's situation straight to Brahmaloka, like that. And from Brahmaloka to Lord Shiva's loka, like that, and to Vaikuntha and back. And all this time, Ambarish Maharaj is waiting for a decision. What's going to happen? Interplanetary, multidimensional travel is possible. For us, it's like, what is this? Like way beyond our imagination. Because on earthly realm, we don't have that capacity. We don't have access to such phenomena unless there is an elevation in consciousness. And the human being, the at most can elevate himself to is by the process of mystic yoga. But the good news is that we don't have to follow that. Simply by the execution of bhakti yoga, all of this can become understood and realized. So if we just continue what we're doing, chanting our rounds, following the principles, performing our seva, all this is realizable by the mercy of Krishna. So we just have to be a little patient and let the process of bhakti work. So, totally tangential from the verse, I beg your forgiveness, because I don't know what else to say about interplanetary travel. The only interplanetary travel I know is on the chariot of my mind, and you wouldn't want to hear that, honestly. So any comments, questions, Imanch? Yeah, you can ask the question for 24 minutes if you like.
If it's okay, can I just read something quickly from one of Prabhupada's purports?
Yeah, sure.
My question is based on your class
and
this purport. This is from CC Madhyalila. The verse is, this is Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami speaking. He writes, "In this Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is no contradictory conclusion, nor is anyone else's opinion accepted. I have written this book to describe the simple substance as I have heard it from superiors. If I become involved in someone's likes and dislikes, I cannot possibly write the simple truth." So purport says, the simplest thing for human beings is to follow their predecessors. Judgment according to mundane senses is not a very easy process. Whatever is awakened by attachment to one's predecessors is the way of devotional service as indicated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The author, however, says that he cannot consider the opinions of those who become attracted or repelled by such things, because one cannot write impartially in that way. So my question is, you were saying very nicely how, you know, the beautiful quality of Priyavata Maharaj is, he was going one way, and Guru said, that's the way you have to go, and he just switched focus. And I was thinking, I'll use a personal example, because if I speak in vague terms, the answer might not touch my inquiry. I was thinking about you and how...
When how is that personal? Personal means about you. So speak about you.
Interpersonal.
No, it's not interpersonal.
Okay, there's a person called X who, inspired by the advice or inspired by his mood of devotion, decides to leave his work to focus full-time on devotional service. And this person, X, is living in a community where his activities may seem, that's odd, why would you want to leave a nice job? And this person, X, has a son called Y. And so, I'm just wondering, one may feel this inspiration, I should follow my predecessors. Prabhupada is also very nicely explaining. But one is also living in a community. And it seems that maybe a lot of mental strength is required to not let that bewilder you, as Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami is saying. He wasn't bewildered by people's likes and dislikes. I'm just trying to make sense of it all from my...
First of all, it would make sense if you accept that X is a fool, number one. Everything else makes sense after that. Something about Maharaj Priyavrata that I didn't say, but I will say it now, is not only did he change course, not once is there expression that he complained about it. Not only that, he performed his duties as the emperor of the universe with such attachment, with such intensity, that everyone's like, wow, it's described that the way his chariot moved, it separated the earth, Bhumandala, into seven islands, like that. I mean, he became the most glorious person. So it's not just we take on a service, now I'm saying we, but not just the principle is, not just that one accepts it, but one does it perfectly. So case in point is Srila Prabhupada. His spiritual master, first ever meeting, he didn't even finish paying his obeisances. Go to the Western world. Huh? What is that? You know how to speak English? Go to this Western world. Second time, they have a conversation in Radhakund. And that's the only instruction. And the picture is that Prabhupada is walking with his son in tow, holding his hand. And it's on Radhakund. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur turns to Prabhupada and says, Western world. He thinks, I have a family. How can I do something like this? 1933. Something in Prabhupada's life. Things all happen in gap, periods of 11 years. 1922, he met Bhaktisiddhanta, I think. 1933, he got that instruction. 1955, he took sannyas. 1966, he landed, established ISKCON. 1977, he left the planet. Something like that. There are events like this. So when he wrote a final letter to Bhaktisiddhanta, I am a householder, I have a family, all your sannyasis are fantastic disciples, they're doing so much preaching, what can I do for you as a grahastha? The only letter he got back 3 days before Bhaktisiddhanta's passing is, go to the Western world and preach. It's like, how is this possible? But he did it. Life's going this way, he went that way. The normal course of life, aged, retired in Vrindavan, goes that way. Lands in a country, 3 heart attacks, an attack of paralysis on the right side, kidneys are failing, no contact, but moving in. And that too, joyfully did that. No complaint. You know what, my Guru Maharaj, of all instructions, he gave me such an instruction. Why such an instruction? He could have said, write books in Vrindavan, I would have had, but no complaint. And he did it with such expertise, with such life. The whole, even till today, we're talking about the glories of Prabhupada. Like that. Amazing. That's Maharaj Priyavrata's greatness. But that one safe way of looking at all of it is just see it as Krishna's orchestration to enhance Prabhupada's glory. Instead of they didn't appreciate, I mean, whatever is the dynamic, we don't want to get into it. It is so far in the past and we are too tiny to figure that out. But the only way to appreciate is Prabhupada is being glorified. That he, although he was not understood by his, let's say, god brothers, or didn't get all the support that he wanted, still did not let go of that instruction just because he didn't get the support. It's a glorification of Prabhupada in a grand sense. So we can take that way. Matthew?
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
You were talking about the that mystic yoga is automatically covered when you practice bhakti yoga.
Mystic?
Yeah.
Yoga?
Yeah.
Continue to say the sentence again. What did I say?
Oh, you were saying that if we're doing bhakti yoga, that mystic yoga is already covered by that practice of bhakti yoga. No. Can you explain a little bit what mystic yoga is?
What is mystic yoga?
Yeah.
In the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes Ashtanga yoga. Ashtanga means there are 8 limbs to this yoga process. First 2 are following rules and regulations. The 3rd is performing hatha yoga or asanas. That's at the level of the body. Then is the pranayama process, which is the metaphysical between the body and the mind realm. From pranayama comes pratyahara. That means withdrawing the senses from sensory engagement. And from here, everything else is now on the mental plane. Dhyana, dharana, samadhi. The samadhi means the mind is completely absorbed on the beautiful form of Paramatma. There are different forms of meditation. In the 5th canto, the yogis meditate on the universal form, on the form of Paramatma, the form of the Lord as the Shishumara, the dolphin that encompasses the entire universal system. All of that, but it's the form of Vishnu. When one is completely engrossed like that, one develops 8 perfections. Anima Siddhi means becoming very tiny. Laghima Siddhi, becoming very light, floating. You know, people levitate. These people can float like that. There are 8 of them. Prakamya, reading others' minds, Prapti Siddhi, acquiring objects from distant places, etc. There are 8 of them. And these siddhis is there. Narada Muni has all these siddhis. Dhruva Maharaj developed these siddhis. Remember the pastime of Dhruva Maharaj? As he was meditating and holding his breath, the whole earthly realm became heavy and started tilting. As described that he had developed the weight of Lord Vishnu, etc. So bhakti yoga includes all the other perfections. So don't try to see if you're levitating, but point is the perfection is included in it. Yes.
I'm thinking out loud this this point about services that are given to us that, you know, we accept and we just take it on. Sometimes there is opportunity for discussion where one may feel a service is not appropriate for one's nature, and but the spiritual master still wants that way. So it seems like this whole argument or stance of not appropriate for one's nature is invalid completely. It's just where one is in their Krishna consciousness at that point, because thinking like, anyway, Krishna takes care of what we lack, right? So,
that is correct.
That's an invalid. Is that true?
I wouldn't discard the whole thing, but the answer is yes. So we're talking of Maharaj Priyavrata here. So we'll start from there. His nature was not that. His nature was very well renounced, that's the thing. But for the sake of the universe, its situation, he's convinced to do this. So yes, one's nature may not be in it, may not be something. Yet, the reason we rely on nature and all that is the phase of transcending. Like in chanting, we have Namaparad and Shuddhanam. And there's a stage in between, which we call Namabhas, trying to overcome the offenses, trying not to commit the offenses, that phase. So like that, there is full surrender. That's whatever Krishna wants me to do, that's what I do. And then there is this stage that I don't know anything. The in-between is where we rely on natures. Relying on nature and engaging in service according to nature is the interface. Is the medium that brings one towards the, I guess, pure stage, purer stage. I didn't catch the other part.
That inherent in that is the fruit of mentality. Like, if we mean again, I'm thinking as I'm speaking because if we say something is not our nature, if we go deeper, underlying all that is for fear of how the outcome would be. That's why.
That's right.
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 Okay.
So think of it this way. There are two varnashram systems that Prabhupada talks about. One is called the Asuri varnashram system. That is very much on the basis of one's psychophysical nature, right? Brahmanical this, Shudra-like, whatever. That's there. And then Prabhupada says there is the Daivi varnashram system. In the Daivi Varnashram system, all the services, engagements are centered around what is needful for serving Krishna. And in that he describes, just because one is performing the service of Brahmana, it does not mean that they will not go and do Shudra work, because then there is no concept like that. But in the Asuri Varnashram system, a Brahmana will not do Shudra work. So this is material, this is spiritual. Whatever is needful for Krishna's service, this is whatever is according to my nature. And it is, we use that, I shouldn't say use that. We employ the nature, all that, is to bring, because there is this material situation. We have to come from material standard to a spiritual standard. It's the bridge that helps one move forward. So we say nature. With some maturity in Krishna consciousness, whether nature or not, that's what's needful for Krishna and the spiritual master asks, then one should be prepared to go with it. Yeah? Okay. Acharya Nishtha, Prabhu.
Thank you. I had two questions.
Two questions.
Yeah. I guess, first of all, I was wondering how to kind of deal with conception that can arise in the mind. You're indicating when something happens to us, we often...
Speak a little slow.
We often are eager to put...
Remember, you're speaking to not a very bright person, so speak slow.
We're eager to put the blame somewhere else, rather than accepting responsibility. Sometimes this tendency can be dragged to an absolute when we actually try to blame Krishna for difficulties that we may be facing. And I'm wondering kind of specifically when either we have that experience, or sometimes in the association of devotees, we may be around devotees that, although we're practicing devotional service, we're aspiring for a favorable mood of devotional service. This type of, you know, mental, I don't know what it is, this kind of mental block, it causes the mood to become actually unfavorable, hostile. And then one is, we've had experience sometimes when we may be around and there's some hostility, actually, so the mood is actually becoming unfavorable, but we're in that association, and it's not like a non-devotee, or an envious person, they're envious towards Krishna, but if a devotee is, that mentality develops, then how do we deal with that, whether in ourselves or in the association of devotees?
What I've heard, and I guess I'm still learning, is that's between them and Krishna. I have to learn how I am going to operate in that environment. And that's my learning. Everything else is between them and Krishna. I can stay away, I can say something, I can do something, whatever it is, that's different, but it's between them and Krishna, in the ultimate issue. You want to say something?
It seems that we may also get affected by that. Like, in other words, how
so
do we...
If we are getting affected, that's an indication of our work in our Krishna consciousness. What is it that I need to do to not be affected? Because I can look at the lives of other great personalities that they're not affected in such situations. So why is it about them that they are not affected? Why am I affected? Part of honesty is I am affected. Okay. That's it. Okay, so what do I do from here on? So the point is, regardless, the attention is always on what I'm supposed to do for myself. Whatever I can do with that, that's what. Sometimes I have to leave that situation. Sometimes depending on each person's maturity, strength, realization, whatever. Prabhupada was with Dr. Mishra, put his meat in the fridge, and in the same fridge Prabhupada had to keep things, he didn't get disturbed. Not the same situation you're talking about, but as devotees, that's what we look up to, examples. Therefore, shastric examples are important for inspiration, strength, for prayer, for holding on to.
Just be circumstantial. I mean, the response would be circumstantial. It would depend in time, place, and circumstance.
More importantly, time, place, circumstance, but direction of guru. Always remember. If we can't remember anything else in Krishna consciousness, something that we can remember is, whenever in doubt, ask guru. Even if no doubt, ask guru. Better to ask. If we culture that habit of asking, getting clarification from guru, we'll always be safe. We don't have to understand big topics. We don't have to understand the complexity of material modes of nature. We don't have to just ask guru and follow. This was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's point to Prakashananda Saraswati. Why are you not studying Vedanta? How will you not know matter spirit? No, I went to my guru told me, you're not so intelligent, just follow, chant Hare Krishna mantra, and that's all I'm following. Safe, always safe.
That relates to my second question. In regards to the first half of your class, that we may be hearing from the spiritual master's representatives, and perhaps some instruction is there. It may not be a direct instruction, but sometimes there's hesitancy to accept or apply something we may be feeling more as like a suggestion, like hearing a class or in association. We may hear different points that are not necessarily direct instruction, but more of a suggestion. But for us, the mind may find obstacles or reluctancy to apply that.
Right.
There's some hesitancy.
Then that's good. If we recognize hesitancy, that's good. It's Krishna's way of showing us that's a block. Do something about it. Now, whenever we hear class or some things, our whole idea is to extract the principle that we can apply. For example, if a spiritual master is telling a grahastha, be like this. A brahmachari sitting there shouldn't just shut down his ears and say, oh, that's for grahasthas, you know, fallen fellows, so whatever. Not for me. I'm austere. What's the principle that I can learn from this? If the, let's say, spiritual master is instructing the brahmacharis, be like this. The grahasthas can say, what's the principle that I can apply? Because everything is instruction. How one may apply may depend upon ashram situation, etc. But the principle is still principle. Now, suppose the spiritual master tells the grahastha, be charitable. It's good for you. The way a brahmachari will be charitable, because that's the principle, may be different from the way grahasthas will be. Unless the brahmachari becomes Robin Hood, take from others and give it to others. I'm charitable. Bhakta Robin.
And that, it seems in my experience that also that hesitancy is, can be called what we say weakness of heart.
There are many reasons for it. Weakness of heart could be one.
And that is overcome just by, I mean, that's an anartha.
Weakness of heart is overcome. Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives how to overcome weakness of heart. Is to very carefully hear and serve Guru and Vaishnavas. And the heart becomes stronger. Intelligent study of scripture. Okay. You know, I thought I didn't have anything to say. I'm going to end class by 8:05. But anyway, thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.